emergency room visits are skyrocketing from the use of dangerous energy drinks. Are you next in line, suffering from fatigue, tiredness, or seeking peak performance? Real energy.
Real.
My fatigue was obliterated with a groundbreaking new product called Alter Rush. I feel the rush, and the best part is I've got real energy for peak performance. Alter Rush cracked the code to energy. Recently published studies show that ingredients found together only in Alter Rush increased energy an average of 45% in patients with chronic fatigue, and athletes experienced a 40% increase in stamina. Now that's energy. Visit alterrush.com, alterrush.com, A-L-T-E-R, rush.com. Free trial samples are available for a limited time. Get moving again with Alter Rush, A-L-T-E-R, rush.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the FDA. Not intended to treat, diagnose, prevent, or cure disease. Results may vary.
Hey, y'all, are you looking for Chlorella? Some chocolate superfood with organic vanilla. Food-based vitamins keep you a healthy fella. Use your wife's credit card, don't even have to tell her. Go to Natural News Store, that's what it's there for. Get your superfoods, herbs, and a lot more. Feel young like you did before, and let Mother Nature's medicine work it like it's there for. I know you care for your health, therefore. Don't eat those GMOs, throw them out the back door. Don't stay poor with your diet if it's killing you. Enjoy your life with nutrition that's filling you. We got freeze-dried fruit that's organic. Super clean, superfoods, best on the planet. Blueberry, strawberry, even pomegranate. Yeah, it's ready to ship, and if you buy it, you can have it. Yeah, this is Mike Adams, the Health Ranger. Check out store.naturalnews.com for all your organic supplements and superfoods. Or call 888-959-6415. That's 888-959-6415 to order now. Coconut, maca, spirulina, goji berry, superfood protein.
Do you know someone who can benefit from this radio program? You can find the complete archives of this show and hundreds of others at naturalnewsradio.com. Just send your friend that link, naturalnewsradio.com, where they will find truly amazing interviews and information that simply isn't published anywhere else. In the Natural News Radio archives, you'll find interviews with Dr. Andrew Wakefield, Senator Rand Paul, Governor Jesse Ventura, Suzanne Summers, alternative cancer doctors, nutrition experts, preparedness experts, and a wealth of others. And it's all free. Listen in real time at naturalnewsradio.com or download the MP3 archive files anytime you want to listen on your phone, mobile devices, or personal computer. When you want articles on these topics, check out naturalnews.com with over 35,000 article pages on nutrition, natural cures, health freedom, and much more. It's all part of the Natural News Network. Thanks for listening.
Let freedom ring throughout the land. Let no one trade your soul for dollars, dirty hands. Demand the truth, transparency. For we must be the masters of our destiny. Let freedom ring.
Welcome. You're listening to the Know Your Rights Hour with vaccine researcher and author Dr. Sherry Tenpenny and vaccine rights attorney Alan Phillips, now proudly sponsored by the Natural Farm Source, and that's Farm, P-H-A-R-M, the Natural Farm Source, in tribute to the late Dr. Mayer Eisenstein. Go to homefirst.com and click on the store button there for your source for vitamins A, vitamin C, and probiotics to stay healthy naturally. We are live every Monday evening on blogtalkradio.com. It's blogtalkradio.com/KnowYourRightsHour at 9 Eastern, 8 Central, 7 Mountain, and 6 Pacific times. And we are proudly rebroadcast at naturalnewsradio.com on Wednesdays, 1 p.m. Eastern, 12 noon Central, 11 a.m. Mountain, and 10 a.m. Pacific times. We welcome your calls during the live show. You can call in just to listen by phone or to participate. The number is area code 646-478-0772. That number again, area code 646-478-0772. And you're welcome to call in to ask questions or make a contribution. And you can email us during the week, attorney@vaccinerights.com, attorney@vaccinerights.com, and Dr. Tenpenny, D-R-T-E-N, Penny, drtenpenny at gmail.com, although she may not be able to give you a personal response due to the volume of emails. And let's see, we are at, is it January 26th already, 2015? I'm vaccine rights attorney Alan Phillips, and with me this evening, I'm having trouble getting through the announcements this evening, Dr. Tenpenny, Dr. Sherry Tenpenny. Sherry, I have to say, I was really taken aback this week. I saw you referred to as a medical terrorist, and I just didn't realize I was sharing airtime here with a medical terrorist. What do you have to say for yourself, Sherry?
Yes, and I've been an international public health menace and all kinds of additional lies that have been told about me. I'll tell you, Alan, the whole fiasco that's been going on with Australia that started on January the 4th has been an important lesson in learning how to have thick skin. I can tell you that.
Oh, well, I hope to learn from you from that. You know, I struggle with that, and fortunately don't have to struggle with it as much as you do, because for whatever reason, to me it's positive feedback. It just lets me know that you're making a difference. You are a potential terrorist, but certainly not to the general public, only to those people who are part of the underlying corruption. They're terrified of you, Sherry, and the evidence of that is the aggressive backlash that something as simple as a schedule to talk to maybe at most a few hundred people that it has created. So, but I see they haven't taken you out yet, and you're still here with us, and I, for one, as well as all the listeners, I'm sure as well, are delighted that you're here and that you're doing what you're doing, and hang in there. You know, we're all behind you on this.
Well, thank you very much, Alan. That's really good to know. I've gotten so many amazing emails from Australians, actually. I mean, long, in-depth, well-written, obviously educated people, highly structured emails saying that they are appalled by what has happened in the Australian press and media, and that they are embarrassed to even call themselves an Australian. And that's what these emails have said. I posted several of them on my Facebook page and gotten huge responses of people saying to the person who wrote the email, "You are such an inspiration and given us strength to continue to do what we do." Because, you know, I may be the public figure that's taking a public thrashing about all this, but I know that in the daily lives of many parents, that when they just try to tell sometimes even their spouse, their sibling, their cousin, their in-laws, their coworkers, that, hey, I've done my research, I've looked around, and I don't like what's coming through that needle, and I do think it can cause harm, and I think there's much better ways to take care of my children and keep them healthy. And then they get badgered by all of those people I just mentioned, and they get beat up and called names in the press and being told that they're irresponsible and they're causing all kinds of people to get sick because they're these filthy people who don't vaccinate, when the truth is, it's just the opposite that is the truth. I mean, there are, more and more articles that have come out saying that people who have been vaccinated are sicker. They shed a lot of the viruses and virus particles that are in the vaccines. They can, I always think of them as kind of like pig pen, you know, walking around with all this dirty stuff that's like coming off of their skin. You know, pig pen, the Charlie Brown character, you know. And
right.
And I believe that parents who don't vaccinate are great parents. I think that they've done a huge amount of research. They have struggled with this issue because we have 200 years of vaccination dogma that is crushing down on everybody's head when they decide to say, no, thank you, I'm going to do something else. And so I give lots of kudos and thanks to all of those parents who've taken the time to do their homework, to ask questions, and have decided that I'm not going to vaccinate and I'm going to keep my children healthy, and I don't care how much, you know, sticks and stones can break my bones, and I don't care how many names that they call.
Well, and it's just so amazing that it's only, on average, people of above average intelligence who are doing their research and coming to alternative conclusions. And gosh, how is it that all the intelligent people are so have gotten so sucked into all this propaganda and think there could ever be any problems with vaccines. I mean, it's really interesting. I had a phone call from a journalist out west today, and she first emailed me and said, could I have 5 minutes in your time? And I said, well, if you're serious about the issue, it's going to take a lot more than 5 minutes, but I happen to have had a cancellation.
Great answer, Alice. Great answer.
I said, but I happened, and this was true, I happened to have had a cancellation this afternoon, so I have time. And so she did call, and I managed to make a couple of sometimes I'm good on my feet. I made a couple of good sort of summary sentences, but I kept offering over and over again. But if you really want to understand, she was calling to ask me about philosophical exemptions in California and elsewhere, and did I know the history of it and so forth, which I really don't. But I said, you know, the really main issue here are, you know, some key points that support or explain why people would want to have philosophical exemptions. I must have offered that at least three different times in what couldn't have been more than a 5 or 10 minute conversation. And she was real polite, but at the very end of the conversation, Sherry, she's saying, well, I don't know, I have to talk to my boss. I don't know if that's the direction they want to go with this. And it's like, well, what is it you're trying to get at here? You know, if you're going to talk about philosophical exemptions, and I said, you know, a key problem here is that there's not transparency, there's not an open, objective conversation. What there is an attempt to control information. And she seemed to be able to hear that and responded favorably, you know, to the way I phrased whatever I'd phrased there. But over and over again, when I wanted just to offer, you know, two or three key reasons, like, did you know the government pays $110 million a year on average for the last 25 years for vaccine injury and death? You know, so many people don't know that, even though the program's been around for a quarter of a century now. It's amazing how many doctors and others have never even heard of that or don't know anything about it. And she just didn't want to hear it. And then when I finally, I think politely, but kept bringing it up, she finally says, well, I'll have to get permission and get back to you if they want to go that way with it. Sherry, you know, it takes people like you speaking your truth, doing it over and over again. And I know you and I didn't sign up to be martyrs, and I hope that's not what we become, either one of us and others, you know, doing this work. But we've got to keep speaking it, Sherry, because if we don't, who will? And
well, you know, I got a call from a reporter the other night from L.A. He writes for the largest Hispanic newspaper in Los Angeles, and wanted to talk about this whole measles thing. And the entire conversation I don't think he knew who he was talking to. Meaning, I don't know that he knew he was talking to a doctor that was the balance that he needed for his article. And because, you know, they're supposed to write balance pieces. And so you and I, God rest his soul, Mayor, and some of these other people who are always, there's only a handful of us that they can call to get sort of a contrarian opinion. And so, but he's, the entire conversation started from, he was like kind of badgering me about, what do you mean that parents should have the right to make up their own mind about vaccine? Parents aren't smart enough to do that. And parents, you know, they should be trusting their doctors. And do you really think that parents should refuse these things? And it was becoming kind of a debate between he and I, that he was to the point where at one point I stopped him and I said, you know, I have to stop you here because I have done many, 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 many interviews on radio, television, print interviews, and you're not doing your job as a journalist. You are not taking a neutral position and interviewing a person for their position for your article. You are already starting the concept of where your article is coming from a very pro-vaccine position, and you're not doing a very good job with your job. And he just sort of stopped in his tracks, and he said, okay, so let's start over. I said, that's fine. He said, well, he was from Spain, and he had seen a lot of children that had measles. And I said, and did very many of them die? And he said, no. I said, so then what is the terror of having a rash and a fever that's going to go away in 7 to 10 days and leave children with a lifetime of real solid immunity? And we've got an epidemic in quotation marks, of 67, maybe 80 kids in a state with a population of 68 million people? I mean, more people died in car accidents this week. I mean, more people probably died in bathtubs. I mean, I don't know. I just made that up. But why is this a front page news item that has a very long news cycle that's going on and on? Now, today's news that was all coming out was about they were going out and interviewing parents with young babies, saying that they were so inconvenienced by all of these people who refused to vaccinate their children, and they were going to have to keep their young babies at home and quarantine them because all of these irresponsible parents weren't vaccinating their kids. As though the vaccine is 100% guaranteed. As long as you're vaccinated, you're not going to get sick. You're not going to shed any viruses. You're going to be just perfect as long as you're vaccinated. But you are absolutely the antithesis of being perfect if you're unvaccinated. It's amazing to me. It's just amazing.
One of the things that comes up over and over again in my spoken and written arguments is I refer to the CDC webpage where they say that vaccines work 85 to 95% of the time in children. In other words, 5 to 15% of vaccinated kids don't get immunity from the vaccines. And I know Dr. Tatiana Obakanich, immunologist, has spoken in the past about how even if you do get immunity, and many people, that immunity wanes over time. And it's just curious to me. And then, of course, the CDC also tells us that non-vaccinated people can get this these days really rare and unusual condition that most people have never heard of. But you're a doctor, Sherry. Sherry, you know about this. It's called natural immunity. And
wow.
You have to find a sense of humor to tolerate all this. But the point is this, that they always treat it like if you get a vaccine, you're fine. If you don't, you're going to kill everybody. And they forget the fact that, well, I'm going to put the word fact, you know, in big quotes here, the mainstream belief, let's say, that as long as most people are vaccinated, everyone's protected. That's what herd immunity tells us. That's the reason we allow non-medical exemptions in most U.S. states with respect to vaccines required for daycare and school enrollments, because everyone's protected. But somehow they lose sight of their own mainstream information, and they go out there and say, oh, if you don't have a vaccine, everybody else's vaccine automatically and magically somehow ceases to work, and you're not going to kill yourself, you're going to kill all of them. And herd immunity, that only counts when we need to use it to make a point, like, let's say, this is why you don't have the right to decide what you put in your body, because your vaccine protects everybody else. So the only reason they keep clinging to herd immunity, because I'm sure, as you know better than I do, Sherry, it's been disproved over and over and over again, but the only reason they cling to it, as far as I know, is to justify this idea that you don't get to decide what to put in your body or your children's bodies. You have to get a vaccine because your vaccine protects everybody else. Well, if that's true, then get off of it. A few of us cannot be vaccinated and everybody's still protected. And at this point in time, we haven't reached a point where we have 30, 40, 50% of parents opting out of vaccines. There are pockets of high exemption rates around the country, but overall, the CDC reports anyway that the overall, I think it was a median exemption rate was around somewhere in the 1.8%, but somewhere around 2%. Pretty small.
Well, Alan, I'm sure that what you're saying in terms of what you just said about herd immunity, I want to just rephrase that a little bit, that you were saying that from the perspective of a pro-vaccinator, not from a person who's pro-choice, because herd immunity is a false entity. I mean, like you said, you know, I just wanted to make sure that the listeners clearly understood the position that I'm sure that you were trying to make, that herd immunity, from their perspective, that they say that if 85% of the people are vaccinated, then that protects the herd, whereas herd immunity is really meant to be applied to the when people who have had the real disease. And so it's a very long discussion, and maybe we can just talk about that some other night, just the whole thing about herd immunity. But it's the same convoluted, silly argument about, as the parents who say, well, my children are vaccinated and your children aren't, and I don't want your unvaccinated children to play with mine. And it's like, but if the vaccine works and that's what you want to do, then what are you concerned about? The only kids that should have some concern, or in your mind, should be the unvaccinated ones. And so if they're working, why would you not want to be around unvaccinated kids? I mean, they have so many convoluted arguments that, and I think that one of the reasons why some of these blowbacks have been so vociferous and just absolutely aggressive is because I think that they're losing ground and their backs are kind of up against the wall. And you and I both know, Alan, of the that because we've talked to thousands of people over the years we've been doing this, that the children who are unvaccinated, for the most part, are healthy, don't get sick, have rarely, if ever, been on an antibiotic, are not on long-term medications, and then the children who are fully vaccinated are just the opposite of that. They're sick all the time. They always got snotty noses. They're whiny. They don't feel good. They have seizure disorders, all kinds of things that they're on daily chronic medications for. And so if we had an entire generation of unvaccinated kids, sure, we might see some measles and mumps and rubella and some pertussis. And yes, some kids are going to die because that's what happens with children. And they're in a highly vaccinated population, some children die. And I don't say that meanly or cavalierly, but sometimes that happens. But I don't. If we had another entire generation where we had 85% of unvaccinated kids, we would have a chance at another generation of healthy human beings on this planet. But where we are right now, with all of the highly vaccinated kids, that they have their DNA interwoven with viruses and heavy metals and all these things, I think that we have a very sickly population, and it's getting sicker all the time. Somebody, I was told the other night that there are 200, by somebody in the know, that there are 223 vaccines seriously in the pipeline right now. Some of those are cancer vaccines, some of them are therapeutic, but some of them are for more and more and more pathogens. How many more vaccines can we put into a 10-pound little baby human and not have more disasters when we've got pockets of autism now at 1 in 57 kids, and they're projecting by 2025 that the rate of autism is going to be, you know, 50%. One in every two.
It's just mind-boggling.
And I get so tired of hearing the pro-vaccine people say, oh, there you go again. You're talking about autism. Autism is not connected to vaccines. It's been disproven. And who was that doctor, that really doctor that was discredited? And it's another one of those very convoluted arguments that when you cannot stand and argue on the facts, and debate the actual facts of what's in the vaccine, what's in the package insert, what is the vaccine injury compensation program, how much money has it been paid, how many dollars are we spending on children and adults who've been vaccine injured to go to specialists and be on drugs. If you can't stand and argue those things, then you sit back and you sling mud and you call names. I mean, that's really good.
Yeah, no, it's a really good indication that you're winning when they resort to something other than objective information. When they start throwing mud, I guess is the simplest way to summarize it, when they start behaving in immature and unprofessional ways, that's a clear indication that they don't have anything intelligent to say and just have too big of an ego to admit that and get out of the discussion. But thank you for clarifying the point, Sherry, because I was not meaning to suggest that I personally believe in the herd immunity theory as it's conveyed by pro-vaccine people to apply to vaccinated people. I think there's a really good chance there's a valid herd immunity effect from the natural diseases. But my point is that whether without even having to take apart the mainstream views, they are inconsistent with their own mainstream information.
Exactly.
And we can use that fact to show the inconsistency and lack of effectiveness of their arguments and views. Well, Sherry, we've got some callers lined up here. We have one gentleman in particular that I originally spoke to at the end of the year last year and invited to come on. How about we go ahead and switch over to the phones and get some of these people on, because I bet they have some important things to say. And
I want to say
start
just one thing before we do.
Sure.
I want to say just one thing before you call somebody on. I was looking for this post. we were talking about calling names, this was a post I put on my Facebook page. It says, when the debate is lost, slander becomes the tool of the loser. And that was a quote from Socrates.
From Socrates?
Yeah.
Oh, that's beautiful. Email me that one sometime, Sherry. I think that'll be my new email tagline. I love it. No, that's,
all right.
You know, a lot of, it's hard sometimes, especially when it's online, not to get sort of sucked into the fight. And a lot of times I think those are actually strategic moves on the other side to either scare us out of even talking at all or suck us into a whole argument about whatever. And we need to allow us to have the self-discipline to not get engaged in those kinds of emotionally energy-consuming arguments that end up being completely non-productive, but instead to step outside of it and say something simple and sweet like that phrase you just said. Say that, please, one more time, Sherry. That one, I think, bears repeating.
Yeah, hold on one second. And it is that when the debate is lost, slander becomes the tool of the loser.
When the debate is lost, slander becomes the tool of the loser. I love that.
Yep, and I think you could put slander / name-calling / you know, petty childhood things and pranks and all those other things becomes also tools of the losers.
Yeah, bullying maybe would be a good summary phrase for all
of
them.
Yeah, exactly.
Awesome. Well, we got to go to break in a couple of minutes, but let's go ahead and bring on David Bowman. David is a fascinating gentleman to me. He's a healthcare professional, and Sherry, you and I have probably talked with hundreds, if not thousands, of healthcare professionals between the two of us over the last few years, in particular since the swine flu pandemic, which is when the push for flu vaccines for healthcare workers began to really take off, at least from what I saw, and has just been gaining momentum ever since. But David took an extra step that most other healthcare workers haven't done, and I wanted to invite him on the show, Sherry, to tell us about that. David, welcome to the show. It's a pleasure to have you with us this evening.
Thanks a bunch, Alan. It's really an honor to be with you guys, and you as well, Dr. Tim Payne. You've been a big fan as I was learning more and more about mandatory vaccines for healthcare workers. Your name surfaced quite a bit, and both you guys have served as a great source of information and as well as encouragement, to be honest with you, because there's just not a lot of conversation that's happening regarding this issue.
Well, thanks to people like you as well as us, David, that's changing, and I'm just, again, really intrigued with what you've done with this now. So you have put together a book, do I understand correctly?
Yeah, my... you know, what started really for me is kind of a personal journey. I'd been working for a large healthcare system, and I've been in the healthcare industry since 1993, various capacities from a clinician, a clinic owner, a manager, director, as well as a executive vice president. And so I've seen kind of different parts of the whole healthcare spectrum from you know, small operation, large operation. Most of my clinical background has been in hospital settings, and what started for me that really kickstarted the journey was in 2010. I received a email from our associate health department indicating that it was time to come and sign a declination form for the flu vaccine, and. So I'd done this previously, only this year that I went forward and met with the Associate Health Department to sign my form. I was informed that while it was optional that year, that there had been some legislation that had been passed in the state of Texas that would essentially make it no longer an optional part of employment. That essentially, we were going to have a flu vaccine to continue work. And that just seemed real unsettling to me. It seemed... very big brotherish. It seemed an invasion into my body by a healthcare system, by a governmental agency. And so we kind of bantered back and forth, but really, to be honest with you, I really didn't know a whole lot. And so that's really spurned a conversation in my own mind regarding, well, why do I feel this way? Why do I feel like it's wrong for an employer to require me to have a vaccination or wear a mask for several months out of the year. And so this kind of cathartic experience was a way for me to process through my journey in this whole conversation regarding mandatory vaccines. And so I didn't set out to write a book. I set out really just to kind of answer a question in my mind to help affirm the decision I had made. And from the information I was able to gather, I really was affirmed in the decision that I made to not receive the flu vaccine, but found that the situation and the context within which the flu vaccine had been pushed to the surface to be required was really despicable in many ways. And there's tremendous duplicity, there was concealment of information, there was at times deceit regarding the whole issue. And so that's really what spawned this ebook, essentially, was my own experience just trying to journey through, like, why do I feel this way? Why does this not seem right to me?
Well, David, what's the title of your book? And let people know where they can get a copy. And I would love to hear you, if you could summarize and just give us sort of a brief outline of some of the highlights of your research or investigation that really validated your initial feelings that this is something that you shouldn't be required to do.
Sure. The title of the book is The Man Behind the Mask, Why I Chose to Not Receive the Flu Shot. And it's a downloadable book. It's available at through iBooks, Barnes & Nobles, and soon to be released as well and through Amazon. And so essentially what I did is I covered about 14 subject matters, initially starting off with defining what the flu is, moving forward from defining what the flu is versus an influenza-like illness into the scope of the flu problem. And that was probably the first place that I started running into a lot of misinformation. The CDC was telling at the time, 2013, was reporting that there were 3,000 to 49,000 deaths per year from flu-associated deaths. And yet, as I dug into their own information, what I found in quotes from the CDC was, the CDC does not know exactly how many people die from seasonal flu each year. That was a real frustrating statement, because here we had passed legislation in the state of Texas requiring a vaccination as a condition of employment for hospital systems, and yet the agency that the state had required by law hospitals to model their policies by didn't actually know how many people died per year. And to go on, the CDC went on to state that they derived those figures to convey the full burden of seasonal influenza to the public, which to me was a very unscientific way to arrive at a legislative action requiring people to have a medical procedure. As I delved further, I learned that the number of deaths per year from the flu has declined outside of the vaccine, that we'd seen deaths per year per 100,000 deaths in the United States in 1940s was roughly 10.2 deaths from flu per 100,000, and that rate had declined through the 90s to 0.56 deaths, and this was in spite of three pandemics within that same time frame. So I saw that, A, we didn't really know how many people died from the flu. Looking outside of the CDC, flu deaths had diminished significantly over time outside of any vaccination. Thirdly, I noted that as I began to try to figure out, well, how many people are actually getting the flu? Maybe if it's not an issue of mortality, if it's not a death-related issue, maybe it's an incident-related issue. And the data that I was able to locate through Peter Doshi, actually, who's been a great source of information, noted that roughly 16% of the specimens that have been sent in for analysis in the United States between 1997 and 2013 were actually found to be the flu, versus 84% of the time those specimens were not the flu. And I found that really intriguing, so I started delving into the state of Texas and looked at the flu flu surveillance systems from September of 2012 through September of 2013 and found essentially the same information, that there had been 54-plus thousand specimens and only 9,000 of those had tested positive for flu, which equates to about 16%.
David, I got to jump in here.
Yeah, go ahead.
Excuse me for interrupting you. I got to jump in here. We've got to go to break. We're a little bit late for that. So hold on. Let us get to the break here that we've got to get in, and then we'll come back to you. And we also have some other callers on the phone. Please stay with us. We're going to try to get to everybody we can tonight. David, think about during the break how you can give us a summary of your information here and the name of your book, and again, where people can get it, because I want first of all, just to commend you for not only having a concern, as many thousands, tens of thousands, or who knows how many healthcare workers do have these concerns, but again, for going the next step to sort of documenting, not sort of, but actually documenting your concerns and making this available for other people to understand what's going on in this arena. You're listening to the Know Your Rights Hour. Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, Attorney Alan Phillips, and David Bowman on the phone with us right now. We'll be back right after break. We've got lots more to talk about, so don't go away.
Emergency room visits are skyrocketing from the use of dangerous energy drinks. Are you next in line, suffering from fatigue, tiredness, or seeking peak performance? Real energy. My fatigue was obliterated with a groundbreaking new product called Ultra Rush. I feel the rush, and the best part is I've got real energy for peak performance. Ultra Rush cracked the code to energy. Recently published studies show that ingredients found together only in Ultra Rush increased energy an average of 45% in patients with chronic fatigue, and athletes experienced a 40% increase in stamina. Now that's energy. Visit UltraRush.com, UltraRush.com, ALTERRush.com. Free trial samples are available for a limited time. Get moving again with Ultra Rush, ALTERRush.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the FDA. Not intended to treat, diagnose, prevent, or cure disease. Results may vary.
The Natural News Store is now open. Hi, this is Joni Cox with Homegrown Health with some great news for your health and your budget. Visit shopnaturalnews.com to start saving money right now on superfoods like cacao, camu camu, and acai. You'll find coconut flour, coconut sugar, and hemp seeds, as well as detox products like Zeotrex, Oxy Powder, and Nascent Iodine. You'll also find survival organic food supplies and colloidal silver. Both can help you prepare for natural disasters or other events that might threaten your health or safety. As Hurricane Sandy recently taught America, just one storm can knock out the power grid and leave us all scrambling for food and medicine. We've also got amazing herbal medicine cabinets and herbal survival kits. Plus, we're the exclusive source for the all-new Natural Attitude Turmeric Extract. It's a powerful, alcohol-free, liquid form of turmeric with high absorbability. Plus, get free shipping in the USA on orders of $99 or more. A portion of all sales helps fund health freedom and food freedom initiatives. Find all this and much more at shopnaturalnews.com. That's shopnaturalnews.com.
Have you ever wanted to learn where you can get free food and medicine from the plants growing around your neighborhood? Or how to turn your own backyard into a food production center? Or even how to reverse cancers using the latest groundbreaking research in alternative cancer therapies? You can learn all this and more from webseed.com. It's sort of like Netflix, but it's for documentaries and how-to courses on natural health, food production, self-reliance, and other life-saving topics. I'm Mike Adams, the Health Ranger, and I created WebSeed so that listeners like you could get instant streaming access to truly groundbreaking instructional courses. Our new program called Vaccines Armed and Dangerous exposes the total fraud of modern vaccine quackery, and our Surthrival course teaches emergency preparedness, including skills like how to build your own emergency water filter. Explore over 100 valuable courses and documentaries right now at WEBSEED.com.
We are back with the Know Your Rights Hour, Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, Attorney Alan Phillips, and author David Bowman on the line here. I just want to real quick let folks know that you can find out lots more information about Dr. Tenpenny at TenpennyImc.com, TenpennyImc.com, and DrTenpenny.com, DrTenpenny.com. And you can find information about your legal rights concerning vaccines at VaccineRights.com. David, I hate to rush you, but I want to get to some of these other callers who are also on the line waiting. So tell us again the name of your book and where people can get it, and really appreciate the work you've done and taking time to share this with us this evening.
Sure. The book title, again, is The Man Behind the Mask, Why I Chose to Not Receive the Flu Shot. It's available on iBooks, Barnes & Noble, and soon to be released on Amazon.
Feel free to call back in any time to share more about your book or any research you come up with beyond what was in your book, or just to touch base. We'd love to have you back on.
I appreciate it. Thanks a lot, you guys.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
And Sherry, if you're in agreement, we'll try and catch some of these other calls here. We have a caller, caller from area code 347. You're on the air. Area code 347.
Hello?
Yes, hello.
Oh, yes, hi. Okay, so my question is, how can I go about getting an exemption for my daughter's daycare? Because in order for her to attend daycare, she needs either to get her vaccination or something stating that I'm objecting. So how can I go about that?
What state are you in, first of all?
Excuse me?
What state are you in?
New York, Bronx, New York.
Okay. Because the procedure and the exemption laws and procedures are different in every state. So the first thing you need to do is familiarize yourself with the available exemptions. But in New York, they have medical and religious exemptions, and I believe in New York you have to state what your beliefs are. If you will email me, I can refer you to some people in New York who work with exemptions there all the time, and they can help you with that. You can email me at attorney@vaccinerights.com. I work myself directly with people all over the country except school and daycare exemptions in New York, and it's has to do with the way the licensing works. But as fate would have it, and this is proof that there is a God, as fate would have it, New York is the only place in the country where I know anybody else that I can refer people to, and it turns out to be the one state where I need to do that, although I will work with people in New York on immigration or military or employee, other kinds of exemptions, but the school exemptions, it has to do with the way the legal precedent and the licensing works. I really can't advise people about school exemptions.
Okay.
But email me, and I'll refer you to some people there that can help you.
I'm sorry?
Yeah, it's important that you approach it right from the start. And any time, whether it's a school or daycare exemption or military or any other kind of exemption where you have to state your beliefs, it's really important that you do that correctly from the start, because you can't unring the bell, as the saying goes. You can't go back and fix it later and say, oops, I really meant to say something else. So
exactly.
Talk with people.
Thank you.
Sure. Talk with some people before you apply so that you know you have something that is going to be legally solid and sound. Okay.
Right. I was just told to just get a form filled out and just get an authorized.
Well,
you
have to, you know, some states have forms. I don't think New York does. And don't go get a form off the internet, because people who make up forms and put them on the internet, they don't, you know, the law is different in every state. That form may or may not work, you know, in your state. And I mean no disrespect. There's a lot of people out there, you know, coming from the heart, trying to help people, but if they don't, a lot of them don't understand how the law works, and there are people who have lost exemptions by getting information off the internet. So you got to be real careful about that. Get it from somebody who's got experience doing this. Ideally, a lawyer, but there actually are some non-lawyers in New York that know this stuff really well too. So, but send me an email and I'll give you some names of people to contact.
Definitely, thank you very much.
Okay. Sure, thanks for your call. Sherry, I'm going to push on down the list here, if that's okay, see if we can't get to a couple other callers here before we run out of time. Area code 916, you're on the air.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay, my name is Joshua. I'm calling from California. Just real quick, my son was born in 2009 when I found out his mother was pregnant. For whatever reason, I was led to a lot of Dr. Tenpenny's work, and I just want to take the opportunity to thank you for all of your efforts and everything that you've done. You really helped make a lot of my decisions very easy.
Wow. Well, thank you, Joshua. That's, you know, it's always nice to hear that, you know, when you spend thousands and thousands and thousands of hours putting together information, it's always very nice and very confirming to know that it really has helped somebody, and that, and to hear from them directly is quite an honor. So thank you.
Thank you. Absolutely. So in recent times, I've ran across some new things, and maybe you guys can shed some light on it. I've actually talked to Mr. Phillips as well. But let me back up. I had a, we, as parents, agreed that we weren't going to vaccinate. When we split up, she had used the vaccines and my dedication to not vaccinating as a tool against me. Even though I still feel in her heart that that was her intent to not vaccinate, knowing that if we go into court, they're going to side with her, she used it as a bargaining chip. Ultimately, we came to an agreement, and my son is almost six, and we still haven't vaccinated with no intent to do so on the horizon. The one thing I found, though, as I was getting a little more scared, was the Walgreens and the CDC and these effects where people can go in and get this MMR, or you get your shingles or whatever shot from Walgreens. And the correlation between Walgreens and the actual medical industry, there seems to be a void there. So it appears on the surface that she could take my son to a Walgreens or a CDC or whoever offers these and get this done, and I may never know about it. Have you guys experienced or heard from anybody that's gone through something like that?
Can I jump in on this one, Sherry?
Yeah, I would say yes, I have, and I'd like to hear what you have. I certainly have. Alan, what would you like to say about it?
I want to make just some real quick summaries. I've talked with I probably advised something on the order of 60 different family law attorneys all over the country on this issue, and I want to just give some real quick summary points on what I call the vaccine custody disputes, where parents split up and disagree about vaccinating. And I just want to say, first of all, count your blessings if you were able to come to an agreement with your ex on the issue. First of all, I've never met a family law attorney that understands the legal arguments on this arena, because there are the legal arguments with vaccines in the custody setting are unique to vaccines. They provide exceptions to the usual best interest of the child legal standards that states all over the country have. So, and this is not a put down of family law attorneys, they just never see this. And I was looking at the issue for years before the arguments began to dawn on me. So I'm not smarter than anybody else. I've just been focused on this for a long time, like nobody else has. So the family law attorneys don't know how to approach this. When they do get a hold of me and do go to court with the proper arguments, real good chance you're going to lose anyway, because judges will do what they want to do, acting out of their pro-vaccine belief and information, and they will step over the law. And I see family law attorneys do this, not just on the vaccine issue, but they do what they want to do because they can. And not all of them are like this, but many of them are. And especially when you get the vaccine issue, they don't really care what the law says. So you really have to, if you end up in court on the issue, you need two things. You need to have the correct legal arguments, because you can't win these cases going in trying to argue the science. Courts don't decide the science. They weigh the evidence, and the weight of the evidence is always going to be in favor of the majority of doctors, the CDC, the state health authorities, and so forth, all the pro-vaccine people. So you have to go in there with the proper legal arguments, and family law attorneys don't know what they are. So you got to get that. And then you got to be prepared to go up on appeal, because the bottom line is judges are biased, and many of them, I've seen some of these cases win, but many times the judge will just step over the law to do what the judge wants to do. Just to underscore the point, there was one of these cases where a judge took the two attorneys back behind the courtroom, what they call in chambers, so they're off the record, And the judge says to the attorneys, you guys settle this because there's no way that my name is going to end up in a newspaper headline. And what he means is there's no way I'm going to let a child go unvaccinated and then somebody dies and it's my fault and it gets in the newspaper headlines and there goes my career, you know. So it's a really difficult issue politically. But, yeah, a lot of times when parents who agree not to vaccinate split up, one of them goes pro-vaccine to beat up the other parent and to gain a custody advantage. And when parents are not able to settle their differences, then it becomes a strategy game. And that's what attorneys do when they go get attorneys. They strategize.
I think part of your question is, have you ever seen a parent, you know, the other parent take the kid behind your back and go to CVS and get them vaccinated? Am I correct on that?
Yes, we did go through court. We do have an agreement that we will not vaccinate, and no, it's also written in there, no government agency can supersede this agreement through force. But if she was to take him, like you said, to CDC and say, oh, I need this vaccine, it appears on the surface that I would never know about it.
And you're right. And unfortunately, it's true. And I've seen this happen before. And they could not only go to like CVS, they could go to the health department. They could go to a lot of places and get that done. And so you're right. So how do you prevent that? Well, what I usually counsel parents, because I've testified in quite a few of these divorce cases, and I won't do it anymore because I just feel like that's not the place to settle this, is to do kind of what you've already done. Keep the conversation open. I've told parents sometimes, listen, if you are the person who's insisting on vaccinating, then I want it written down in our parental agreement that you will agree to whatever illness this child ever gets now or in the future, that you are fully and totally responsible for all the medical bills. And including a cold, missing a day from school, that you're going to have to be the one that stays home from work to take care of them, all the way up to seizure disorders and all the serious complications that, as we all know, can come from a vaccine, and it can be any one of the vaccines. So you, mom, if you want to insist on vaccinating, then if anything happens, you get 100% of the medical bills. Now, to be fair, if I don't want to vaccinate, and there's a big fight going on with this, and I don't want to vaccinate, and the child gets sick, then I will assume 100% of the medical bills, and you and miss a day from work if they are home with chicken pox or whatever. And so, because we know that most of these kids rarely, if ever, get sick, and if they do and have a real natural childhood disease, it comes and goes mostly with inconsequence for the vast majority of them. And because a lot of times what these things come down to is they come down to money. That the parent, one parent is trying to declare the unvaccinating parent as an unfit parent so that they can get more child support. And what happens is that the baby's immune system ends up being a football in the middle between two adults who are actually at the core arguing over money. They're really not arguing over vaccines. And so that, you know, I would just, you know, really stay on the, if you've got some semblance of a conversation and some level of relationship that you can continue to talk about it, I would just make sure that you keep those things on the table and keep feeding her with information on what could happen if they vaccinate. And, you know, here's some things that can happen if they get sick. They miss a few days from school and they have lifetime immunity.
Well, I ordered, when she was pregnant, I ordered a couple of your books. And I cannot tell you the recommendation. I cannot even tell you how I found you, but God bless, I did. There was a DVD that we ordered as well, and that was the clearest thing that got through to her. It was so much information, but it was so user-friendly that she understood it, and she was able to absorb it and make an educated decision. We kind of have the same, this is off subject just a little bit, we kind of have the same thing with raw milk. In order to get through to her that I wanted to my son to drink raw milk, I had to take her to the farm. So we went to the farm. The farmer was able to break it down to her, you know, why it's a good idea. And it was the same concept with you, and it really helped out. And we are still at a very high level of communication. She still feels that vaccines are not the way to go. But every time she wants to, you know, press the subject, man, I get a little scared about the CDC thing or CBS. It's just something I would never even know that it happened. That's what scares me the most.
Well, it's a very real concern because, you know, even if there's an order or an agreement, you know, it's just a piece of paper that doesn't keep anybody from doing anything. And if somebody really wants to vaccinate a kid, there are plenty of doctors and others out there who will be happy to vaccinate the kid. And if the child is too young to tell you later what happened, then they can get away with it. And I don't know anything that, you know, that I could tell you or we could tell you that prevents that.
Didn't you say that your son is 7 now?
My son will be turning 6 in July, and just real quick, no medical issues, no horror stories that anybody zero, nothing.
Yeah.
Anything that they talk about, oh, infant this and that, and oh, my kid got zero, nothing, complete health.
So I would have the conversation with your son, you know, in terms that he can understand, because I've had parents tell me that, you know, now that they're talking about using schools as vaccination sites and wanting to go into schools behind parents' backs and vaccinate kids, to have the conversation with your son, you know, at a very 6-year-old level about what a vaccine is, what the pro-vaccine people will tell you, but here's the other side of the story, and that if anybody ever comes at you with a needle for any circumstance, I want you to run. I want you to scream as loud as you can, and I want you to run. And you go get the phone, and you call me, and I'll come and pick you up no matter where I am. And get them to understand from this age, because now we're seeing things on the kids' channels and on the, you know, the places. There's all these cartoons now about why kids should get vaccines. Well, I think that we need to take a proactive role with our children and explain to them why you have chosen the opposite side.
Well, and you're right, and you know what, it's ironic. I have showed him videos and needles and say, you don't ever let this around you. The problem now is they have like these oral vaccines. How do I tell my kid that, you know, how do I get him to differentiate, you know?
Well,
and it's tricky too, because you don't want a child to be caught in the middle. You know, if mommy and the doctor are saying, oh, this is what you need to be healthy, and then, you know, he's got information from the other parent saying, don't do this. That's a really difficult position to put a child in. So this is all complicated stuff. I mean, I agree. We have to educate the kids.
But he said that right now he and his wife or his, you know, estranged wife or the kid's mom are on a good communication. I'm talking about like things that happen at school. You know, they're not supposed to talk to strangers. They're not supposed to take gifts from strangers. Well, you shouldn't take pills and you shouldn't take shots from people either. And I don't care if you know them or not. These are not things that you want to put in your body. You have to come and ask mommy and daddy first.
Yeah, definitely with schools. And we saw this coming up in during the swine flu pandemic, where there was a lot of talk and some experimentation with using schools as flu shot distribution centers, which is really unnerving stuff. We actually have run out of time, and I hate to cut you guys off, but we've got to close out here. Thanks a lot for the call. The caller we didn't have time to get to, very sorry about that. Please call back next week or email us during the week. And thanks to everybody for listening. You've been listening to the Know Your Rights Hour with Dr. Sherry Tenpenny and Attorney Alan Phillips. And, gosh, we got to 2 or 3 callers this evening. We're here every Monday evening at 9 p.m. Eastern and 6 p.m. Pacific time, and proudly rebroadcast by naturalnewsradio.com on Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern and 10 a.m. Pacific time. We'll see you next week, folks.
Let freedom ring.
For we must be the masters of our destiny.